Russell in Carmel, California. It's tape number 448, July the 4th, 1980, and this is side one of the tape. The music, appropriately, is from the Danse Macabre, Sanson's music, The Dance of Death. Maybe we should use that as a theme song for the tapes from now on instead of some of the musical shows from Broadway. Many people who take these tapes are concerned with investments. They have investments in savings in different trust funds or silver or gold or stock market investments. And they're interested in the opinions I have on world events because they do, of course, directly affect financial investments. There never seems to be, in my mind, enough concern over the lives. I very seldom count dollar and silver, but I count murders and genocide and deaths. And I think the perversion of the justice system and the arrogant genocide that is going on right now is so important. And, of course, the deaths are used to manipulate the market. If you don't follow the deaths, you can't follow your financial investments because massacres and deaths go along with fascism, and fascism is a nationalization and control of all the economy, and there is no free society when the banks are tied up by the government and the government owns and prints all of its own money and controls it the way it wants to, or closes the banks or takes control of the banks. The direct proportion of the amount of deaths and murders and genocides that takes place, to me, is an indication of the faulty economic system. The way the economy will fall is in direct proportion to the amount of deaths. And if that is true, then, of course, the economy is in a very shaky position today, and it always has been. And that became obvious to me as I began to study political assassinations and murders and genocides or the erasing of entire countries. There's a popular game on the campuses reported in the New York Times, June the 9th, 1980. It's called Killer, or it's a game on how to murder, and then one of the consequences of being the remaining murderer is that you have to commit your own suicide. This is from the New York Times, June the 9th, 1980. The story comes out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Of course, Michigan is the home of Henry Ford, the granddaddy of the national, international conspiracies, Warren Berger, Gerald Ford, and various other prominent people that figure in these assassinations that I refer to so often. Ann Arbor, Michigan, Killer is a popular game for an increasing number of students in college as far west as the University of California in Los Angeles and Massachusetts Institute of Technology in the east. The strategy of the game is to kill. The novelty of it is that each player is simultaneously the assassin and also the victim. Killer was introduced at the University of Michigan 4 years ago by Lenny Pape, P-A-P-E. The current executioner of the game, Robert Cantor, is the coordinator at the university, and rules for the game are coming in requests from all over the nation. In Michigan, the game is played at the East Quadrangle, in case you want to know where to play it. Out of 850 residents in this particular area of the school, 250 play its game in the runoffs, played it last year. If a victim sees his assassin in the act of the kill, he may kill the assassin in self-defense. When a person is killed, his name and picture are posted on the obituary board in the university there as part of the game. For a kill to be legal, it has to be witnessed by two other persons. You can't say that you killed somebody unless two people saw it. When one person is left in the game, when you get down to one person, that person is declared the winner, and as a result of being the winner, he must commit suicide. Not surprisingly, that then ends the game. The Michigan record is 15 kills by one person. There's a special award for the most ingenious kill. Once an assassin lured his target, this is in the game, to a United Parcel Service office and was wearing a borrowed uniform and killed the victim at the counter. The university housing official who supervises the East Quadrangle said there are no casualties or problems concerned with the game at the University of Michigan, and the game Killer is played usually from midterm finals and exams up to Thanksgiving. That's the time period it's played, and they want to explain the only dangerous part of the game is that it absorbs so much energy from the killer or the killed that it's hard to get schoolwork done. Killer is a collegiate cops and robbers game, spreading the campus. Now, what happens is when they leave the campus, the winners of the kill, the people that are the finalists, can then be sought by the intelligence agency and used for organized crime because of their expertise in outwitting. In other words, it's an IQ test for plans of assassination on how to do it and how to get away with it. And then, of course, the famous suicides, such as Candy Jones was supposed to do, or Michael Protz, one of the men who formed Jonestown, called a press conference and shot himself while the men were present in the bathroom and killed himself, or George de Morenschild, involved with the John Kennedy assassination, Lee Harvey Oswald shoots himself the day that the House Select Committee was supposed to interview him that afternoon. They're investigating the assassination of John Kennedy, and there have been endless suicides, a parade of suicides through the years. When the last person's left, after he's useful in killing all the others, then he's instructed to kill himself. The object of the popular game on campuses is to assassinate your opponents. That's the lead story, large letters that read in the New York Times, as they say, June the 9th, 1980. One of my favorite villains died this week. Very little notice in the newspapers. As a matter of fact, he died a week ago, and it wasn't in any of the national papers, and usually there's quite a good obituary service done by the Washington Post, the New York Times, particularly the New York Times, who so far have managed to leave this out of their newspaper. Walter Dornberger died in Hamburg, West Germany, reported July the 2nd, 1980, in the San Francisco Chronicle. They describe him this way. Walter Dornberger helped create Adolf Hitler's V-2 rocket bombs that bombarded London in the closing months of World War II. He died last week. He was 85. A general in the German army, he led the research of the secret Ponemon testing site in the Baltic Sea. He emigrated to the United States after the war, and 2 years he was in an English prisoner of war camp. The details go on about the capabilities of the V-2 rocket. Then the obituary in the San Francisco Chronicle states, in the United States, the former general worked as an advisor to the U.S. Air Force. Later, he was made head of Bell Aerosystems Research Department, where he retired as vice president in 1965. He was vice president of Bell Helicopter Research in the time of the Kennedy assassination, 1963, November 1963. He retired 2 years later. But Walter Dornberger hired Michael Payne. Michael Payne was a research scientist, three generations from Harvard University, who lived in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Irving, Texas, and he was the host of Lee and Marina Oswald. It was Ruth Payne who drove Lee Harvey Oswald's wife, Marina, down to New Orleans while Lee was getting settled with the intelligence and network and the CIA in the New Orleans area prior to the assassination. She lived with the Paynes, Marina Oswald did, in April, and Ruth Payne then drove her to New Orleans. And then when it was time for Oswald to go into Mexico to set up his contacts with the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Department, and his double was circulating in the Soviet and Cuban embassy, while Oswald was in Mexico, Marina Oswald was driven by Ruth Payne back to their home in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It was that home where Michael Payne was the morning after John Kennedy was assassinated, and the FBI and the police returned with a series of boxes that they had taken from the garage the day previously that weren't indexed or photographed on the spot. And Michael Payne told them to come back to the house, but he had to go to the grocery store. And it was out of that box that they pulled the negatives of the picture of Lee Harvey Oswald holding the rifle that allegedly was supposed to kill the President of the United States. Michael and Ruth Payne played a major part in the assassination of John Kennedy, in the cover-up and housing of Lee and Marina Oswald, and keeping them with the Dallas Czarist Nazi white Russian community. And he worked with Dornberger. As soon as John Kennedy was killed, there was a telephone call from Bell Aerospace saying the communist Lee Harvey Oswald, who worked at the depository, could be a suspect. Those phone calls came right out of Dornberger's location at Bell Aerospace in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And then, of course, 2 days after Kennedy was killed, November 24th, 1963, Bell Helicopter became a major supplier of helicopters and weapons and Air Force weapons for the Vietnam War, making extensive profits out of the escalation of the war, which took place after John Kennedy was murdered. had Kennedy lived and withdrawn the troops from Vietnam, Bell Helicopter wouldn't have gone on to be one of the great aerospace industries in the United States. They went on to build helicopters and had huge contracts for the Shah of Iran. The man who owned or controlled Bell Aerospace that hired Walter Dernberger, Mr. Miller, is now Secretary of our Treasury. It was interesting, Jimmy Carter went to Venice last week to the conference of all the major nations, the NATO nations, and discussed war and peace, and etc. He was supposed to take Mr. Miller, Dornberger's boss, on the airplane with him, and he didn't. And Miller was furious, this Secretary of the Treasury, and had to take a commercial airline to Europe. And there was an article in the New York Times about his literally being bounced off. I wonder if Jimmy Carter is trying to push Brzezinski and Miller and these Nazis off the warmongering team in order to cool things down and hopefully keep peace going. On the one hand, we're escalating the war every minute. On the other hand, there are little signs of some shaky business. But whatever was happening at the time Miller was bounced, that was the same time that Walter Dornberger was expiring. Walter Dornberger is a man with a background so treacherous that the British didn't want to release him to come to the United States. They thought he should be hung in Nuremberg. And many times on many tapes and radio stations, I've read a section of the book Project Paperclip by Clarence Lasby, page 113, where they described Walter Dornberger, and they said that Dornberger was a menace of the first order, that he should be left on the dust heap after the bombings in Europe and the Nazification of Europe. And the British didn't want to release him, and it was Wernher von Braun who insisted that he wouldn't give us the space rockets and the rocket technology or the atomic weapon technology unless we took Dornberger to the United States. The British reminded the Americans that he was dangerous, that Punemund experiment that they had will always be coming forward, that the Reich will be resurrected and they will return the Reich, and that Dornberger was one of these people who is untrustworthy, that he's a source of irritation and future unrest if he were sent to America. The American government didn't consider that important at all. They put him in the arms industry. The British government tried to see that he would be hung in Nuremberg, but he was released under Project Paperclip, and the book Project Paperclip explains that he got the directorship of research and development at Bell Aircraft Company, but they didn't include the fact that Bell Aircraft was in Dallas-Fort Worth area and did hire people that were directly involved later in the assassination of John Kennedy, an event that was to change the whole world and turn us around domestically and internationally once and forever. The legacy of Walter Dornberger and his kind is seen in the headlines every week, if you just take them this week. One, missiles, planes, and ships in Senate-approved $51 billion arms bill passed this week. Provisions for a new draft registration plan. The Third Reich will have us in that war against Russia that they wanted and which we want. That is a headline. New Three Mile Island study says accident isn't over. That's the legacy of the atomic missile scientists, this type of energy where there's nowhere, no way to throw out the waste, and cancer is increasing all over the country. The percentage of cancer is up tremendously, and it will continue as radiation takes over the water and the air throughout the country. Another headline, Senate passes record arms bill, and Carter orders the draft to preserve peace, right out of 1982. The legacy of Dornberger and von Braun and the Nazis that were allowed to rebuild and were built up by the Americans in the first place and continue to rebuild, the legacy they left are the headlines we have today. Last week I talked about the death of Jesse Curry, the ex-Dallas police chief who believed there was somebody behind the fence, that Oswald didn't fire the fatal gun. And when Curry died, they admitted that a week earlier the chief psychiatrist in Jack Ruby's trial, John Holbrook, had died, in quotes, had committed suicide, and he didn't believe that Jack Ruby was insane, that he had other motives for killing John Kennedy. So it seems that the Holbrook story was delayed a week until Jesse Curry died, and the Dornberger story was delayed a week, so evidently all three died within 1 week, and the Dornberger story hasn't hit any of the newspapers, neither did the Holbrook for a week. Somebody is holding these stories up, and they're coming out at certain times, but it's unusual also for the obituary of famous people to be delayed a week and for the news media not to carry it right away. Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission, who covered up the czarist Nazi connections of Lee Harvey Oswald and let the organized crime Nazis free, trying to make Oswald one lone nut. His reward keeps going on financially. He's now been appointed on the board of the Tiger International. The Tiger International, of course, is the Flying Tiger Airlines, connected with Madame Chenault and organized crime, gun smuggling, narcotic smuggling, and so forth. There's a lot of money, of course, in the appointments that he's taking, and he just doesn't have to account to anybody. If he ran for president of the United States, there'd be more scrutiny into his pocket. So Gerald Ford turned down the offer to be a candidate, a presidential nominee in this next election, and instead accepted the board membership on the Flying Tigers. As they said at the press conference when he accepted this, as Gerald Ford said, "I'm delighted to be elected to the Tigers Board of Directors." Gerald Ford is very bright. He says, "Transportation plays a vital role in the national and world economy." Well, transportation also plays a vital role with the Central Intelligence Agency and the profits from narcotics and gun running. He lauded the Tigers' commitment to serve the transportation needs, and it's a total transportation company and will provide a unique opportunity in the 1980s. He's correct. It is a total transportation company. It will serve anything and transport just about anything. Gerald Ford now serves on the board of the Shearson Loeb Roads Company, the Santa Fe International from Alhambra, the GK Technology Company from Greenwich, Connecticut, the GK Technology, and also the Pebble Beach Corporation. That's that piece of real estate just about 6 miles from my house here. He's on the board of directors of that, and also Grace Kelly is on the board of directors of Pebble Beach Company. It's owned by 20th Century Fox now. The president of it was a graduate of Annapolis. Mr. Stanfill is an Annapolis graduate who bought the Pebble Beach Company, and the board of directors includes Grace Kelly from Monaco with her Pennsylvania connections, and Gerald Ford with his military Central Intelligence, of course, his White House connections. Those lovely people are board of directors of Pebble Beach Company. 20th Century Fox was able to get the money to buy the Pebble Beach Company by making the movie Star Wars, incidentally, which I think is interesting, because one of the purposes of Star Wars was an idea of Rand Corporation to create terror about outer space and control the fear of the Russians and other people about the combat of outer space satellite conflict. This is part of the psych war of Rand Corporation. And Gerald Ford's appointment here was based on the profits that they made from the movie Star Wars, and now there's a new one out. They'll continue making them, and people will gobble it up, and then the profits go into buying up pieces of real estate, choice land around the country that they can control further for their secret meetings. There's guards at the gates, and you pay $3 or $4 to go through, and every car is noticed, and it's a secret hideaway for the very rich to escape and to make future plans. Last week, the FBI was looking for James Earl Ray's brother, John Ray, because of the similarities in the attempted murder of Vernon Jordan of the Urban League, and the local authorities were confused because John Ray was supposed to be under federal custody 4 months ago and regarding an Illinois bank robbery, and he was out on the streets. As I say, the FBI suspected him of possibly playing a part in this other ambush and attempted murder. The Associated Press story said local authorities complained Tuesday that they didn't know John Ray had escaped from federal custody 4 months ago, and that he was still at large. He'd been charged with an Illinois bank robbery. The first public word of Ray's escape came Monday as authorities in Illinois issued a warrant charging him in a bank robbery May the 30th. Ray left the one federal hospital in Springfield and boarded a bus and never arrived in St. Louis, and they didn't know where he was. That's interesting because I had maintained for a long time that James Earl Ray, his brother, could have substitutes in the prison and that he could come and go and leave and that his escape was a fake escape. He did leave, but they brought him back because of public pressure, and one of these days he would take off for good, or he didn't have to serve his full time for killing Martin Luther King, the civil rights leader. I believe that James Earl Ray can weave in and out of institutions at will, and none of us would ever know the difference because he will eventually get his payoff for killing this black leader. But the parallels come up now where his brother is supposed to be in prison and isn't, and is between various escapades and charged with bank robberies, which in fact, may not be his at all, and the money, huge amounts of money, can be donated to Minutemen and Nazi parties and clandestine activities and racist organizations. He's suggested for a $15,000 robbery in one place, $11,000 in another. Nobody knows where John Ray is half the time, and certainly nobody knows where the money is going, or even if these robberies aren't staged and the money is allocated to people to survive on, and he keeps being the fall guy for the robberies. There's an article in the Los Angeles Times, an editorial, Wanted, Black Leadership for the 80s. It's written by Frank Viviano from Pacific News Service. He went to Miami and was doing some journalism on the riot. I suggest that he take time out, Frank Viviano, and just read the King Alfred Plan and understand there is no black leadership, because if you took my files of just black murders of civil rights leaders and professors and military men or congressmen just working in the system, the black leaders have systematically been destroyed. The documents prove the intent to do it, and it's a little sick to be writing an article now, Wanted, Black Leadership for the 80s. What he should be writing is Wanted, Persons Who Murdered the Black Leaders. On the May 23rd tape, tape number 442, I did a half of the tape on the incredible story of the Awa Maru, the sunken ship, the Red Cross ship, that was sent from Japan with the knowledge of the United States during World War II and was sunk outside of China with this billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar treasure that I believe that the Glomar Explorer was built specifically to bring up, and also to bring other treasures that have been sunken through the years at sea. I'm not going back over the Awa Maru. You can get that tape and other tapes that I've done on it. But there's a new issue out of Covert Action Information Bureau that's put out by Philip Agee, and I'll give you the address and where to get it. And there's a whole section there, the unanswered questions of the Glomar Explorer. And I explained on that tape that I believe that our tax money went into the CIA building the Glomar Explorer for the express purpose of then converting it to bringing up treasures that they could use for their own profit. Now, this article is by Fritzi Cohn on the Glomar Explorer. Talks about the mysterious and unresolved CIA mystery in the development of the used ship. And it goes into asking the question of why the ship was built, and that they're still very secret about the purposes or the motives. That locked up in the National Archives are affidavits from various CIA officials that to release the information on the Glomar would seriously jeopardize national security. This is signed by Stansfield Turner, Brent Scowcroft, Cyrus Vance, and CIA officials. The article goes into the Lockheed Georgia Corporation and their role in building this Howard Hughes mining barge, it was called. So there's been a lot of controversy and lawsuits pending on the Glomar Explorer, because there was one ship that was sunk out of Santa Catalina Island in California a long time ago, and the man who was supposed to bring it up and receive the profits from it was beat to it by the Glomar Explorer coming there and believed to have taken this wealth. And the tax division of the Justice Department in California has been trying, in it's a court case called United States versus the County of Los Angeles, to find out how much profit there is, or the tax structure, the Los Angeles County Tax Office, their role in conceiving and designing the Glomar Explorer for the Hughes Company. There was a company called Global Marine that designed it for the Hughes government, and the contract was between this corporation called Global Marine and Mechanics Research. Part of it was made in Minneapolis with Honeywell, part from General Motors, General Electric, and a company in Germany, and the Sun Shipbuilding and Dry Docks Company. And the Glomar was built in 1971, and Roy Ash, who was president of Litton Industry, who had a major role of Litton Industry, and he was head of the Office of Management Budget under Richard Nixon, he is director of the Global Marine Company, which influences the U.S. executive. So there were millions of dollars of tax money, $33.5 million global received from our tax money to put into the Glomar, but Roy Ash, who headed Nixon's Advisory Council on Reorganization in 69 and 70, was involved not only in the contracts to that company, but he was a part of the company and director of the company. And there's a can of worms here, the real story. It was called Project Jennifer, and there's a book out on it. And I think you should get a copy or start subscribing to this Covert Journal if you don't have it. Many of you people know of it, and new listeners may not know. It's called Covert Action Information Bulletin. So what you have to do is subscribe to that and read the story on the Glomar, and then if you don't have it, get my back tape on the Glomar and the wealth that is under the sea that is going to private companies after the ships are built by our tax dollars, and the use of this tax money of ours to make private profits for them. It's a very important thing to consider when we hear all the time about welfare cheaters and cutting back on the rights, the civil rights, and the tightness of money in our local community to develop the schools and hospitals. Hospitals are closing. There's no way to collect garbage, no way to pay the teachers. Our cities are tied up, and the tax money goes into corporations such as this that just multiply their profits after we build the ships with our taxes. There's also an interesting article in the same issue on mind control, The Story of Mankind Research Unlimited by A.J. Weberman. Weberman wrote the book Coup d'etat in America, and he's an excellent researcher on the Kennedy assassination, and for years he was putting me down because I was talking about mind control in the United States, as was Mark Lane, and now all of a sudden Weberman surfaces as the author of an article on mind control, and of course Lane was so involved with the Jonestown tragedy and the aftermath and the profiting of it and the concealing of the mind control experiments down in Guyana that I can see why Mark Lane was so against my talking about mind control. He told me in 1976 that if I talked about mind control, nobody would ever believe me. I'd lose my credibility, and that's why he couldn't be seen publicly with me on any stage. And yet Jonestown was being built in 1973 and was getting ready to be inhabited by 1976 for a mind control experiment of the Central Intelligence Agency. And then Mark Lane plunks himself right down in the middle of the control experiment. So you can see why he was so angry at my working on mind control. So it's interesting that Weberman now is writing stories about the United States government and mind control. Ronald Reagan's fangs are coming out. And while I've done many, many tapes on Jimmy Carter and the narcotics connections, it's time to go to Reagan and the Hitler, Tsarist, drug, Vegas connections and give you a sample of what you're going to get if you vote for him. Don't be so chic that you think, I'll stay away from the polls and I don't like either one, so I won't vote for either one. I do want to remind you of a statement Reagan had last Sunday's paper, June 29th, in celebration of our 4th of July, which occurs today, and our freedom for the United States of America. Reagan has a charter for the Central Intelligence Agency set up by Senator Malcolm Wallop of Wyoming, W-A-L-L-O-P of Wyoming, and five other Republicans, Hayakawa of California, and all of them are advisors in Ronald Reagan's campaign, all five that want to set up a new charter for the CIA. Now, what they want to do is establish a new national office, a new national office of counterintelligence. That's different from Navy Intelligence, Defense Intelligence Agency, National Security Agency, Defense Industry Security Command, or Central Intelligence Agency, or FBI, or FBI Division 5 Counterintelligence. He wants a new national intelligence, and this is identical to Adolf Hitler wanting his Gestapo that was separate from the German army. They want it with power to have any intelligence agency investigate any American who may be engaged in clandestine intelligence activities or terrorism or drug trafficking or international organized crime, to allow intelligence agencies to write their own guidelines. To they, not Congress, not you or me, are to write their guidelines, and they would consult with Congress to open mail, burglarize electronic surveillance against Americans and foreign intelligence agents are targets without any court warrants at all. They want to split the CIA into intelligence gathering and an analytical agency, and the charter would put it in competition with the Pentagon's Defense Intelligence Agency in preparing analysis. On the other side of this tape, I'm going to continue reading a little bit of what Ronald Reagan wants. They want to create a Director of National Intelligence appointed by the President without Senate confirmation, a Director of National Intelligence that only Reagan would appoint without confirmation from the Senate or anybody else. Some directors of the intelligence would be confirmed by the Senate for 10-year terms. couldn't fire him like justices of the Supreme Court. This intelligent czar would have a team, 10-year terms. We'll do more about Reagan and his team on the other side of this tape.